talking about the training program.
At UCLA,
I guess it was.
Oh, yeah, the UCLA.
Yeah.
I think I was telling you that it was, yeah, right, that we had lectures and we also had practical, everything to do with the planning was lectures. To do with reading the blueprints, it was learning to draw prints, learning to draw the vellum, to work on the vellums that are then turned into blueprints. And learning to, it was so interesting. I just loved it because, it was learning precision measuring was just really fascinating. Just the whole thing was really very interesting to me. And I learned so much about metal, learned about tooling. I always thought of tools as things you put in your toolbox, Never thought of them as being dies and things of that nature. Jigs. But they described all of the large machines that lock in. The tool and die, the power press, and the brake, and the other way to cut things out, the router blocks, all these things. And not only the big tools, but what they mean by tooling,
mm-hmm.
and how they can be made, and why you use one form over another, why you, for instance, would shear a part out and then form it up on the power brake, for instance, or why you would have order a blank and form die which to use on the power press, or why you'd use a Garin process to use just a Masonite block.
Mm-hmm.
Various reasons for using these various things.
Was there a shop set up right there too?
No.
So it was
we all came out. We all came out of the shop. See, we uh-huh. all came out of Lockheed's shop area, so we already knew about some little part mm-hmm. of the thing. But we had illustrations. We had a book, with the illustration of the machines or pictures of the machines, so that we'd learn what they were for. We just knew about most of it. Just knew about our little section of the plant. They described really the whole thing.
Mm.
And then we had to learn how you work with blueprints. You get a blueprint, you see, you want to make this little part, and maybe it has a flange, maybe one, two, or three. You look to see
mm-hmm.
how you're going to form it. Because they're all formed in various ways. And you start with flat sheet metal for those things, or if it is a machined part, then it's a casting. You start with a casting rather mm-hmm. than or a solid block of metal, whichever. And you just learn how to make parts out of raw materials, really, out of raw material being flat sheet metal and or castings or solid chunks of metal.
And what was the goal of the course was to
teach us how to get, provide the tooling and the flow through the plant, the progress through the plant, from the blueprint that the engineers draw
mm-hmm.
to getting it out the door.
Mm-hmm.
The tooling orders went to the tool and die shops, or the tool shops, where people made the tooling that the other people, that the assembly people, or not the assembly, that the manufacturing, mm-hmm. the fabricating people used. And also the tooling that the assembly departments use. Because you have, for instance, a jig, if you want to put two things together when you begin to assemble, and then you use jigs to put some in to put them together so that they can be assembled and take shape.
And the assumption was that all of you would come out of the program and go into the tooling division.
To planning. Not uh-huh. We were not going into tooling. We were going to planning.
Mm-hmm.
we were writing the paperwork. This is a paperwork job.
Uh-huh. So you would then, the assumption is that you would then be able to look at the blueprints and
know how to make the part, write out the orders for the tooling that the tool shops would make,
mm-hmm.
and then write out the piece of paper that showed, that you order out so many pieces of flat sheet metal,
mm-hmm.
and each one is designated by number,
mm-hmm.
and then have them sent to wherever the first operation is going to take place, whether it's going to be to the routing department, so they're going to route out a shape with the router block that you have already ordered, And it's got to be gotten, the flat sheet metal has got to get there to that department, and the router block that you asked for has got to get there to that department at the same time, mm-hmm. you know, so that they can be then used and the part is cut. Well, then from where it's cut into shape, that it may go over to the hydro press and be put on. Oh, in that department, maybe you'd have to put holes in it, certain holes in it, to match up with the holes you had already with the pegs that you had ordered onto the form block. And then it's put on the piece of materials put on with these holes onto the form block. And then there may be 20 of them on this great big platen of the power of the hydro press. It's driven hydraulic, right? And it comes down in with the Garum process. You throw in a bunch of scads of pieces of rubber, foam rubber. And then a big thing comes down and shoves the sheet metal into whatever form you've had made in the form block. Then back up it goes, and you have 20 parts sitting there.
Well, it sounds like you learned very sophisticated, complicated.
That's right.
Manufacturing process.
This is manufacturing engineering.
Mm-hmm.
It is another name for it. It's planning or manufacturing mm-hmm. engineering. It is the highest paid department in the plant because it is the most sophisticated. That's why the men went there after they had lots and lots of experience how to make things. So they knew how to make things, and also they knew how to grade blueprints, so they wouldn't have been in the department to begin with.
Well, do you recall what the background was like of the other people who took the class? Did they have more experience and skill than you have? Were you one of the...
I don't know. I don't remember. Mm-hmm. I think the men probably did. They had a sprinkling of women in there.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know how many women there were, actually. I don't remember. But several of them were really ninnies. You know, oh, you did your, you know. And I think for show, really, or maybe to show that women couldn't do it. I don't know. I don't know how they got in or for what their reason was. One was a pair of sisters. The one had some. The one was, you know, quite bright, but the one was just, you know, really didn't know. Still, didn't really know anything. They'd come from the from paperwork department rather than from the shop, the way I had.
Mm.
And another one who probably turned out to be good. I don't know whatever became of her, but.
Given all this, another question that's on my mind is, were you tested for your mathematical skills? I remember last time you talked about enjoying math. How important was your mathematical ability in all of this?
Oh, I don't think very important. I don't really think so. I think it was actually clear thinking, being able to see the what the blueprint said a part was. Which, by the way, is why where Jimmy made himself rather important out there. He combined the ability to read blueprints with the ability to draw in three dimensions, to draw. And he started the production illustration. Actually, he was the first one in the production illustration department out there. He sold the idea. This is not, I mean, there are other people who know about production illustration. He didn't really, he thought of it. And sold it to the people out there who had not yet heard of production illustration.
Yeah, I'm sure he can't. What was his name?
Jimmy Stumps. And he was, he showed the parts the way they really looked, because we were getting into the plant, people who couldn't read blueprints, and they couldn't take time to teach them to read them. So the people had to have some way of visualizing what it was supposed to be look like, how you were supposed to put a clamp on or whatever. So he did that.
Well, as you were obviously gaining some rather sophisticated knowledge and skills, did you begin to revise your notions of your own future and what you wanted to do?
We knew that it was tentative. We knew that Lockheed, we knew the war would be over and that they would no longer need all these airplanes. I knew, absolutely, that this was, you know, going to happen. And I knew that we knew really right from the start they didn't fool anybody, as far as I know. They said that the layoffs would come. Seniority within the department Oh, for a while they were saying no. It was seed earning plan. For instance, I had 5 years, I think, and then I would have been in a better position than somebody with 4 years, let us say. But I forget. They were trying to determine what would be the fairest way anyway. So they decided it would be seniority within the department. And in my department, hardly anybody had less seniority than I as far as overall seniority is concerned. So I was one of the first to go from my department.
Well, I was wondering in terms of when you started going through the... It sounds like you started going through the training program in maybe early 44? Maybe you can place it in terms
of
your childhood.
I think so, yeah.
At that point, given how much you enjoyed all of this, did you think about a different sort of future career than...
I thought, yes. I mean, it opened up the world to me that there were other things to do besides teaching school. And had I been able to stay at Lockheed at that level, I dare say I would have.
Mm-hmm.
Because it is endlessly fascinating making airplanes. And I might have found an end to the fascination had I done it for 10 years. But as it was, I really thoroughly enjoyed all the time I was there. It was always something new. We were working on, when I first went back to the plant, after the course was over, I went to a production department. And we worked on putting in modifications in an existing plane. Mm-hmm. We added, I think, we changed the air conditioning system or added an air conditioning mm-hmm. system so that we had the new plants, we had the tooling to order and the changes to be made, you know, down. Once the thing was made, we had to figure out how to change the parts. Should we scrap this or and make a new, or can you salvage this part by cutting out more of this, you know, in order to fit it in. So modification work was you know, kind of interesting. It was just fun to have the badge to be able to go down and wander around wherever I wanted and see everything that was going on, you know, in the plant, to get a grasp of the overall picture of the thing. So I was there for a while, and then I don't remember how I managed to get into the preliminary planning on the P2V1, and that's planning from the preliminary prints to get the thing started, to get the first one out, you know.
But the first job that after you came back from the training class, mm-hmm. you were actually on the production floor.
Yeah, it was on the floor. It was up on a balcony actually, but it was on the production floor actually, working down there. Things that needed doing uh-huh. from the planning department down there, and liaison with you know, the engineering department and other departments if something seemed to be going awry.
Now, how large a department was that then on that job that you were?
The first one going back, probably I think there were five or six of us there.
Mm-hmm. And was it?
And I was the only newcomer. I came in and went to work with a man. I forget his name,
mm-hmm.
but he was, you know, really, really nice and you know, very welcoming. He just didn't seem to resent me at all.
Were you the only woman?
Yeah,
I was.
The five. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then when I went into preliminary planning, and by the time they got that all set up to make this new plane, which was different, they had PV1s and PV2s. And they were stuck on that particular kind of overall picture of an airplane. I mean, they made several different various models of that. Then this new thing was P2V, and then 1, 2, 3, 4, with various modifications. Each big serious modification had a different number at the end. So that the P2V1 was the first one out. It was a medium bomber. And when I went to work on that, I worked on the bomb bay door, the flight station, and the bomb bay doors. That was the responsibility of my little group. And I think 12 or 13 men and I on that. And we had, with the airplane chopped into maybe 8, maybe 10, I don't really recall how many different sections. And I think nearly each one of the groups had, say, 11 or 12, 13 men mm-hmm. and a woman.
Oh, so each of them had a woman.
I think almost each of them at this time had a woman.
And were all of the, I don't know if you call that work section a crew, but were all these work sections physically in the same work site?
Yeah. there was a giant room. Their rooms are just giant. And we had our desks, you know. We weren't drawing then. We didn't. But we had desks facing each other, and we had, I think, probably 8 or 10. Maybe there were 6. I'm not sure. But anyway, our desks would face each other, all with this particular section. And then for instance, the inner wing section, one section inner wing would be somewhere else.
Mm.
And also,
and they would
their
all
desks would be facing each other, clustered that way. And we had a group leader or supervisor, mm-hmm. I don't remember what it was called there, Rayhan, and we answered to him.
But he was for all the work sections?
No, he was just for our section, just for our group.
And what was the relationship like between you and the men in your section and also between you and the women in the other sections?
Between me and the men in my section, it was excellent. We had a really good time, and none of them, to my knowledge, ever complained about me. And one of the women, I liked, you know, a couple of the women, we got along really quite well. I liked men better, mm-hmm. so I hung around with the guys.
So, for instance, during your breaks and at lunchtime, who would you spend time with?
Well, see, breaks, I don't think we really had any breaks up there, because we could smoke and drink coffee anytime mm-hmm. we wanted, so we didn't really have breaks. And I don't remember lunch. Again, I just don't remember.
Mm-hmm. Well, once you moved into those jobs in planning, was this... Did you maintain the 5-day week, or did you go back up to the 6-day week?
Back to the 6-day week.
Back to
and lots of, actually we did lots of different periods at Lockheed. We also worked overtime. I don't remember if I worked overtime when I was riveting. And I think I did when I was inspecting. I'm pretty sure that from time to time we'd do overtime, which would be 2 hours a day, 4 days a week. We always had, like, for instance, Friday, but we only worked 8 hours. But always Saturday. And then once, as soon as we got back to the plant was going, you know, 24 hours a day.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you would work overtime, what would happen in terms of your child care arrangement?
Well, actually, by then it was 8 to 4:45. But when I moved into planning, it was 8 to 4:45. So then it was just, instead of 4:45, it was 5:45. It was still before 6 o'clock. I could get over there and get in before 6.
Would you have to notify them that you were going to be late, or was...
I expect so in the morning. Well, I mean, we generally knew, or I could call them, I suppose.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember if I called them or not.
But this now sounds like a job where you were in closer contact with other workers compared to some of your past
jobs. Yeah, right. Uh-huh.
How did you feel about that compared to the more isolated work setting?
I don't recall that I even thought about it. Mm-hmm. But we really had a good time. We got a lot of work done. We had a good time. There was an awful lot of sloughing off that bothered, you know, again, it bothered me, as it had when I was down in production mm-hmm. and saw how the people would, on the evening shifts, they'd go in somewhere and sleep, you know, for half the shift. And I just thought that was wrong.
Do you, you mentioned earlier that you were shop steward at one point. Now, this must have been earlier.
I don't know. I think it was after I got into planning, I think it was. Because I was walking around, and I sure as hell wouldn't have been doing that down. It must have been once I got into planning.
And what exactly did you do as a steward?
Actually, very little. I didn't, you know, I didn't like it at all, and didn't do it very long. I didn't want to do it. But somehow I got, you know, sort of railroaded into it. As if it were really my duty to do this. But when they saw that I really, truly didn't have any interest in it and wasn't doing a good job, I think they found out it was, you know, that I wasn't, that I just wasn't really enthusiastic about it.
Do you remember how the approach was made to you to take on the stewardship? Now, was your husband's, it sounds like your husband was active in the union, or at least more...
No, I don't think that he was. I don't recall Jimmy in the union at... anything about the union in general. Somewhere along the line, he went into the service. I guess he got me after he urged me to go into the planning. I don't know. I think that I know I don't remember if I was into planning before he left for the service or not. But they got him. He was going to be 26 on his birthday. And in those days, the draft started, stopped at 26. And Lockheed didn't give him another deferment. Or they wouldn't accept another deferment. Mm. I guess they wanted to scrape up all these people who had not done time in the service. And so anyway, Jimmy left sometime in that year. So I'm not sure just what.
How did you feel about his being drafted?
I don't really remember. Probably sad about it. Yeah, I remember now. Really sad, yeah. It disrupted the, I was really big, pretty traumatic. So many other women were having the same thing to go through. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we all sort of. Actually, it was a popular war. You know, we really thought. You know, I really wanted to go, and I inquired about joining one of the women's services, but I found out that I'd have to give Jeffrey's after legal guardianship to somebody else, or they wouldn't accept me, and I just. You know, actually, whom did I have to leave him?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what I thought I'd do with him. I guess I thought Mother would take care of him. I know, just a pie in the sky. I just thought, I really wanted some adventure. I wanted to get out. I want to see what there is in the world to do. I guess there's a definition of an alcoholic that suits me. An alcoholic is someone who wants more out of life than there is in it. And I think that really describes me. Because, you know, whatever came along, I wanted to do.
Now, at this point, though, you weren't drinking.
No, I wasn't. No. I don't remember doing it even occasionally. I don't remember drinking even occasionally.
Now, do you recall, up to the point that he was drafted, do you recall any changes in your social life or in your relationship? Did you start going out together?
No.
More doing things together more?
Not really, because we still worked 6 days a week. He still went out every Saturday, really, until he went to the service. So they just, he was simply not, we had a very strange relationship, you know. I think in his own way he loved me, in my own way I loved him. But it just was so long established that he went out, and of course, you know, I was aware that he certainly wasn't dancing alone, and he certainly wasn't. Dances don't last until 3 and 4 o'clock in the morning. You know, I obviously knew subliminally at least what was going on. He was simply living his own life, but then so was I. You know, with Jeffrey and Mother, and you know, doing so.
What did you do for recreation on your one day off?
I don't recall doing anything. I just have no recollection of anything that could, you know, remotely be called fun. You know, either taking the Jeff to the park or whatever. I'm sure I must have done some of that, but guessing was really pretty much restricted. There wasn't that much. But, I think I was probably so tired and wasn't really that eager to.
Did you participate in any of the recreational kind of programs that there was at Lockheed, like through the Employees Recreation Club or any of those?
I'm sure that was started before I left, but, you know, I was not much interested. Oh, I remember, yes, I do remember, the Civil Air Patrol was one thing that was involved there. I had, let's see, was that one? Jimmy was still in the service. I was still in Lockheed. Oh, at one point, let's see, when Jeff was 3, that was 1943, I had an appendectomy exploratory operation. I was out 4 weeks and then back to work. And then I was too lucky that I can't remember. Anyway, later on, I had, oh, yes, I can, too. That was somewhat later on. That was quite a bit later on. And I had, I don't know why I'm telling you all this, really. Jimmy came back from the service. We came home on leave. And gave me a venereal disease, gonorrhea. And I had to have a surgery to remove my one tube and part of an ovary. And he came home to be with me. You know, the Red Cross was very big with getting him out. And before he left, he had just gone back, I think. If he had yet, I'm not sure, anyway. I had an ectopic pregnancy. And I had to have more surgery, and that tube was gone, and did that over it, so that that was 30 days apart. It was two major surgeries.
And that was while you were still working?
Yeah,
That's interesting, because it raises for me, it never occurred to me that we should be asking questions about venereal disease with the women who were married to service and coming back. Yeah. That's really important. Yeah.
I had a hunch, you know, from what I had read about a venereal disease, that I had it. And I didn't want to tell our family doctor, so I went to another doctor in Burbank. And she gave me some, those days we did have sulfa. But she didn't follow up on it at all. And I didn't, evidently, the amount of sulfa I took did not, take care of it, or whatever it was. Anyway, she just gave me a prescription, I'm sure. I don't think she handed it. And evidently it was not cured, because I still, you know, I got very sick, and I remember getting terribly sick, very bad pains in my stomach, and certainly. And then I did go to our family doctor, and I told him that she had said, yes, I had this gonorrhea. And he said, no, he's just another kind of infection. And then later on, you know, after Jimmy and I were divorced, he said,